Sometimes at 3 in the morning when I'm thinking about basketball instead of sleeping because I'm a sociopath.
It was a lot more fun to be booed than it was to be cheered because we're just petty, terrible people.
It's a deep, dark space, your brain.
I was like, well, nothing is ever going up my nose, period.
Explain yourself, sir.
I have plenty of things to hide, just none of them criminal.
Welcome to I've Heard It Both Ways.
It's a meditation ain't working, so I'm about to lose it. I'm caught up in my cranium. It's got me feeling quite clueless. It's a meditation ain't working.
So it's about midnight mountain time, Friday night, so going into Saturday morning. Although for me, the next day doesn't start until like 5 in the morning because I'm always up till like 3 and it doesn't feel like a new day until you wake up, that's right? Fair. So anyways, I'm just hanging out, watching a movie, unwinding. Is that cartoon Spider-Man or Into the Spider-Verse, whatever. I mostly just wanted to see it because this character wears my favorite shoes ever in that movie. But anyways, just hanging out, and then all of a sudden I see on my phone, oh my gosh, Kawhi to the Clippers. Just earth-shattering revelation, and everyone's trying to dissect that. And one of my other friends texts me and says, oh, and Paul George too. I'm like, man, I didn't see anything about Paul George. What the freak are you talking about? And then I refresh Twitter, and boom, it's right at the top. Woj bomb, Woj nuke, Woj volcanic eruption, everyone buried alive in ash. Paul George also to the Clippers. The NBA as we know it is gone. Welcome to the new age.
It's beautiful. There is no Iron Throne anymore, and it's just a bunch of noble kingdoms fighting for dominance. And what is the Larry O'Brien trophy?
Well, you know, what's funny is I was talking to my brother before the Kawhi news broke, and I said, remember on Game of Zones how they give the break the wheel speech, the Warriors, yeah. Steve Kerr, whatever? And I was like, first of all, the wheel can never be broken. The NBA is ruled by dynasties. And then like a week later, boom, wheel's broken, wheel's gone. It's a free-for-all, and it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I think the big like Shutter Island type twist that went on was Paul George getting traded. I don't think anyone even
literally
heard a whisper
no
of that.
Like, at least for me, like I was kind of thinking he would end up on the Lakers just because, I don't know, I got fooled by all these fake, stupid, quote unquote, Lakers Reddit insider guys that were saying, oh, I'm hearing it's a done deal. You just have to iron it out. Like, well, it turns out they're all wrong and half those profiles have been deleted, but...
Yeah, that rip to sources and reports. They no longer exist. And that makes me very happy. There are two reputable sources, Woj and Shams. Everything
Although, we do have to give credit to, what's his name, like Chris Carter, I think. He works for Fox. He's a yeah. receiver. He didn't break the news about Kawhi going to the Clippers, but I think... Like a day before, maybe during the 4th or on the 3rd of July, he said Kawhi's decision is, you know, it's not imminent. It's not coming for a little while. So everyone just relax. That was nice because then we weren't held hostage at our 4th of July barbecues and stuff. It's good because the Lakers have to eat it. Lakers fans who are just insanely obnoxious.
That is that's one thing I absolutely love about Woj is he doesn't tweet anything unless it is concrete, set in stone.
Like, he never has to backtrack ever.
And that... I think that's the mark of a good reporter. Rather than being the first one, you want to be the guy that gets it right on all angles.
See, that was the thing because more often than not, I feel like Woj is first, right?
Yeah.
But Shams had the Kawhi news first, and I was like, dang, like Woj, where are you at? But Woj came through with the Kawhi trade, which to me is like kind of a, not a bigger deal, but as a package, it's a you know more important happening than just Kawhi. Because just Kawhi, like, okay, you vault the Clippers into... you know, probably that top tier of NBA teams. But when you add in Paul George and, you know, Woj had the scoop on that, now they're probably the clear front runner, and then everyone else is going to be chasing them.
Yeah, it's true. Looking at the front court for the Clippers, Beverly, Kawhi, and Paul George, I mean, that's...
You mean backcourt?
Three of the top, like... Oh, backcourt. Three of the top six defenders in the NBA. It will be interesting to see who they get to fill out the front court, because there really isn't... Very many high quality free agents left.
But at the same time, like the front court is far and away the least important part of a team, I feel like, at this point.
Very true.
Because everyone just plays small and you just stock up at the wings and go from there.
Yeah, I just don't think Montrezl Harrell can give you quality playoff minutes.
I mean,
he can give you some minutes, but he's not going to be someone you want at the end of the game.
I don't know. I mean, he was a pain in the butt for the Warriors that entire series. Granted, the Warriors don't have a great history of big men either, but I don't know. If I'm building a team, front court is my the least of my concerns. Like there's no such thing as a perfect team. So if you're gonna cut corners on your roster, do it for your centers.
Yeah, if I'm building a team, I get someone who can score the ball, someone who can pass it to the guy who can score the ball, and the guy who can defend the other guy's best ball scorer.
See, that is one worry I do have with the Clippers, or for the Clippers, I should say, is they don't really have like any distributors. Which could, because, you know, Kawhi's not a great passer, neither is Paul George. They both get buckets, obviously. Lou Williams will give anyone buckets. but, like, Patrick Beverley's not a distributor. They don't really have, like, a playmaker for the team. They have guys who can make plays for themselves individually, which, obviously, that's super valuable. But, I don't know, it feels like we'll just be seeing a lot of iso ball from the Clippers this year.
Which, that has been, like, the Rockets' downfall in the playoffs. It's hard to beat a team in seven games when you're just taking out a one player. Like, that's what elongated the Spurs dynasty, is you had so many different people. The Warriors' great ball movement. What really changed the Miami Heat swing was they started moving the ball more, moving Chris Bosh into the corner. And then that kind of leads us into our main topic tonight. Now, this was kind of your concept that you pitched, so I'll let you kind of explain it. It's the shelf life of championships.
And it's an interesting concept, because it's the idea is, like, at what point does, well, we won last year, or we won 2 years ago, or whatever, at what point does that become, like, irrelevant? And it never becomes, like, completely irrelevant, because, you know, a championship is a championship. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do 11 Celtics championships from back before the TV even existed, just kidding, it existed, but barely, do those really matter that much today? Or, like, all those Lakers championships from Minneapolis days, like, no one gives a crap about those. So, like, at what point does a championship, like, stop mattering? It's something interesting to think about, because, like, the Toronto lost Kawhi, and obviously they were sad about that, but at the same time, the vibe, I feel like, with Raptors fans was, like, hey, he came, he brought us a championship, and, like, now, you know, we used to be a joke, and now we have a championship. No one can ever take that away from us.
Exactly. See, I think, like, the Raptors championship means more than the Warriors run does.
Just because you win. I mean, you win. Well, I wouldn't say it means more, because, like, three championships in 5 years is insanely hard to do, obviously. It means more to Raptors fans, but in, like, you know, 20 years from now, 3 and 5 is going to be more impressive than just one championship.
I guess one championship in Toronto would mean more than one in Golden State.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, when you're looking, like, 20 years in the future and the Warriors only have the numbers, like, 92, 64, and 185 still available, just because they retired Sean Livingston's jersey and Andrew Bogut's.
And David Lee.
Yeah, David Lee, that's a good one.
I mean, if you might as well at this point, just go for it. Do them all just in one ceremony. Just fill your rafters with jerseys.
And that's something else. I feel like there needs to be, like, a grace period before you decide, you know what, no one's wearing this jersey anymore.
Well, what I think you can do is you don't let anybody wear it, but you don't come out and say, hey, you're retiring.
Exactly. Like,
you wait until the player's been retired for a year or something.
At least.
Preferably more, yeah. Like, it almost diminishes the honor, in my opinion.
See, but I wonder if that extends, like, the shelf life of a championship, because a lot of those teams that are, like, struggling and had glory days in the past, that's when they start retiring legends jerseys. You realize?
That is true. Get the fans back into it for
whatever. Yeah, remember, how great were we type of thing. Does that extend it, or does that be like, gosh, we're so washed up?
It's a little bit of both, actually. That's tough. That's a very, very interesting point, because, like, you look at the Knicks, and Knicks fans love Charles Oakley, and Charles Oakley did, like, you know, he was a solid player, but he really wasn't really that good. Like, he was just a fan favorite because he was a tough guy, and fans mm-hmm. gravitate towards those guys. So, like, I remember when he got tossed out of the Garden by freaking James Dolan, and Knicks fans were coming to his defense and throwing back out highlights of him throwing people into the stands or whatever. It was like, I mean, those were fun times, I guess, but you still never won anything. So how much does it really matter at this point, besides, like, just nostalgia?
So if they're going back to the Warriors, though, sticking with, like, the tough guy, I mean, Andre Iguodala was kind of their tough guy, Draymond Green. So obviously Draymond Green's going to get his jersey retired, both the Splash Brothers.
Literally the entire Hamptons Five is going to get their jerseys retired.
Which is kind of crazy. I mean, Kevon Looney, if he would have pulled it out, he could have had his jersey retired. but he didn't. So Andrew Bogut in the first championship for saying those picks will get it retired instead.
See, and it's going to be hard for Warriors fans because I don't love the D'Angelo Russell trade for them. Like it, I mean, you want to get good players on your team, but I don't know how well he fits long term for them. I'm assuming they'll flip him for assets down the road, but you know, they're no longer the NBA's royalty. And when you've been really good for a long time, like it's hard to just be a regular Joe again. So yeah. Like for that, the shelf life of their championships, and not just because everyone hates them and tries to discredit their championships all the time, which is another conversation. but the shelf life for those championships isn't that long because it's like when you're used to winning and you expect to be good, when you're not good, it sucks. And you forget, like, guys, we just had one of the most dominant runs in NBA history. Well, modern NBA history.
Yeah, it seems like D'Angelo is kind of a placeholder. And I don't know how that will affect him in the future throughout this season. I think he'll be gone probably by the time Klay gets back. So maybe next summer. But that is a great point because you're going to have this dominant run and then this little lull where you're more than likely not going to win a championship.
Well, and it's funny because, like, so I'm a Red Sox fan, like, irrationally so. Like, baseball's not my favorite sport, but I love the Red Sox more than basically anything in this world. I've seen them win four championships in the time that I've been a baseball fan. They just had the greatest season in team history last year, and then this year they're just kind of, I mean, they're there, they're winning some games, they're, you know, they're a little bit above 500 right now, and they're in the wild card race, and I'm disgusted. Like, it makes me sick. I'm sickened. There's a psych reference in case you didn't know. But then they're like, there are fans of teams, or there are teams or their fans where they would kill to just be in the wild card race. Like, the Mariners haven't made the playoffs in almost 20 years. They would love to be in a wild card race. Whereas me, I'm over here, like, I'm kind of spoiled. Or like the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2018, right? Then they come out of the gate next season and start just terribly. And I'm like, man, this sucks. I hate football. Like, they just won their first Super Bowl, like, last year. What the heck is wrong with you?
So, obviously, after you have that high, there's that guaranteed low. Is there a rejuvenation of the shelf life, if that makes sense? Like, there's a time when you dust off the old memory book and see, oh, my gosh, look at that. Does that put, like, the banner back on the shelf of prestige?
Oh, it certainly does. It's just, like...
But then when does
I'm a person and people are stupid. So that's the problem here, honestly, because I was really frustrated with the Red Sox after the international series that we will not talk about because it was awful. The London series. I was really pissed off after those two games because they were just stupid. And then that night, the Sunday night, I was like, I went back and I watched all the highlights from last year's playoff run and then like the 2013 playoff run. And I was like, damn, it's good to be a Red Sox fan. So yeah, you just kind of got to take a step back and be like, okay, we're not good this year, but we made the Yankees our bleh last year and we won a championship, so it's okay.
Yeah, staying in baseball, I had a friend who's a huge Cubs fan. Like, his whole life, his dad was a Cubs fan. So, you know, the story you've heard a billion times type of thing. He's like, I just want one. Finally get one. Next year, I mean, he's the type of guy that will record the baseball games and then watch them later so he can watch them, like, in 30 minutes. But then he's like, gosh, we suck. This is the worst baseball team I've ever seen in my life, you know? And I'm like, you asked for one. You're going to get one. And
that's,
so
that's the thing. Winning is a drug.
It is.
You're always going to be chasing the dragon afterward. Like, once you get that taste of success, like, once you realize, like, hey, this is the good life, I don't ever want to go back.
You ain't leaving? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, basically. I'm not leaving. shoot, now I totally derailed me. I'm not mad at getting derailed by Wolf of Wall Street. I guess the point I'm trying to make is the more winning you've done, the shorter shelf life your championship has.
I agree with you to a certain extent, except for, like, you look at the Boston Celtics, who most of their success was in the early years of the NBA when they were, like, one of eight teams or whatever. But they've been milking the 08 championship for 12 years now.
That's true.
But I feel like people are finally starting to call them out. And it seems like the Boston faithful have finally, like, it's starting to wear on them that they haven't won anything recently.
That is true. Although they also have the, like, the 80s, the iconic, you know, Larry Bird teams to fall back on too. But that was also 30 years ago.
See, here's my thing. Because I think Raptors fans right now, they feel okay with what Kawhi's done because they finally gave him the championship. But come December, when they're
a seven seed and scrounging for scraps,
they're hanging on to a playoff seed, playoff appearance. They're gonna be like, oh, Remember when we were good, had DeRozan? Why did we trade DeRozan away? And they're all like, we need to get him back immediately. And the Spurs were like, you can have him for a second round pick.
Basically. Well, see, I wonder, like, I look at the Cavs, for example, like, garbage franchise, atrociously terrible, afterthought, joke, stupid, bad, except for the years that LeBron's there. Every year LeBron was there, they were like a four seed or better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously they don't hate LeBron anymore after he brought him a championship, but you basically traded one LeBron championship and a couple finals appearances to be terrible for the rest of time once again. It feels like it's totally worth it in the moment, but like 10 years from now, they're going to be like, man, we should have, well, not held on to Wiggins because that would have been bad. But, you know, it makes you wonder, like, you mortgage your future for the now to win a championship. But, like, how long, and this, we're circling back to the main question, I guess, but it's like, how long does the glow of that championship really last?
I think you almost answered your question there. The glow only lasts as long as you're good. So, really, I don't fault the Raptors for doing what they did, what the Cavs did. I mean, you want to win this season.
Oh, yeah.
And then you complacency is the enemy of
success. Any
sport, of success or any sort of sports metaphor whatsoever. Is you have to continuously get better. I mean, the Warriors did that each year in their dynasty. They continued to sign Boogie Cousins, you know, they added Kevin Durant before that, and before that, injuries saved them. But we won't talk about that. But you have to find way. You can't be just happy with being good. You have to continue to find ways to get better.
Well, going back to the Kawhi trade, you look at, like, they gave away basically every draft pick from now until, like, the rise of the machines, basically. And I mean, if you think about it, the shelf life, I'm liking this trade more and more for the, I've said shelf life like 50 times. I don't have another word for it though, but the shelf life of a dynasty in the NBA, it's about, and not even a dynasty, just like to be competitive in the NBA is like what, 4 years, right? Because LeBron's Heat had about 4 years, Kobe and Pau Gasol and the Lakers had about 4 years, big three Celtics, 4 or 5 years, whatever. You know, Kawhi will be a free agent again in what, 2023? And Paul George's contract will expire before that. So they're still going to have like 6 Clipper picks. The Thunder will by the time that's over. And at that point, you know, maybe the Clippers will have bottomed out. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander will have just won his first MVP. And boom, all of a sudden the Thunder are on the rise and they have their 4-year window.
Which is, I mean, that's the beauty of sports, I think, in a lot of ways. The answer to the question, I don't know if there is a true answer, but the answer to the question, the glow of a championship only lasts as long as the next one.
I'm trying to parse that out in my mind, and I can't do it.
How's another way to put it? You would trade in your past championship for a championship next year. Like, if I were the Raptors, and they could trade in a championship, knowing that they get a championship this next year, wouldn't they want it?
Oh, because you want your championship to be as recent as possible. That's true, because... Ooh, you're smart, damn it. Because, like, as a Red Sox fan, anytime, like, someone comes at the Red Sox this year, I'm like, hey, we won 108 games and the championship last year. Like, buzz off. And it's, like, it's a weak reply, but at the same time, like, it's valid. But as soon as they're not the champions anymore, like, if they miss the playoffs or, you know, get knocked out of the playoffs early, like, boom, your clout is gone.
Yeah. Like, I'd always think, I'm a homer Utah guy. If Utah can just give me one more Final Four, because I was, like, 3 when the 1998 one happened.
See, I remember just, this isn't really going to contribute to our conversation, but I'm going to do it anyways. When the Red Sox came back against the Yankees in 2004, I was like, what, 8 years old, whatever. So I was old enough to know that it was important and that it was cool, but not old enough to like really savor it. So I'm like, dang, like if they could have just put that off like 5 more years, and I would have been old enough to appreciate it. Plus we would have had Twitter to banish the Yankees into hell where they belong. And then enjoy the other 3 championships after, like that would have been better. But you know, it is what it is. You just gotta wait till the next time.
Yeah, so you'd pretty much tear down the entire trophy case for a brand new one.
That makes sense. Because Knicks fans, I've really grown to hate Knicks fans too. I used to not hate the Knicks at all because it's like, you know, you don't hate them, you pity them. But this whole like, oh, Brooklyn still doesn't matter, this is still a Knicks town. Like, is it really? I mean, yeah, you'll always have more fans, but they'll be rooting for a dumpster fire, so who cares? But it's like, half of Knicks fans that are alive right now haven't seen a championship. So to them, like Willis Reed and Clyde Frazier, not, I always say Frazier because it sounds cooler, but Clyde Frazier, like that was forever ago. Like I don't know if that actually happened because who knows what happened in the 70s? No one does. Dark decade. You know, I think the Knicks won two championships during that time. They would definitely trade those two. Just, I mean, even just to like to be good now, I feel like.
Trophies are kind of like cars. The second you drive them off the lot, they lose value.
It's an apt metaphor. Well, technically it's a simile, but.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Like, you have the pinnacle of the trophy presentation and all that, but after that, it's just kind of slow decline.
Slow descent into madness.
Yep. So, that brings up a new question. Is it better to have touched greatness or to have never touched it at all?
Because better to love and lost and blah, blah, blah. No, just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's better to have something to fall back on. Because, like, as a Jazz fan, I hate getting the, like, no rings thing, like, from Lakers fans. It's like, well, you guys have been dog shit for a decade. So, shut up. I'm also quite bitter.
Couldn't tell.
I really hate Lakers fans, man. I just hate them. I spent a week in California, and I didn't like Lakers fans before, and now I just, ultimate disdain. Kobe's overrated. So, yeah, you do want to have at least one championship, at least one brush with greatness. But the more recent, the better.
All right, so you're the next GM. The Thunder offer you the next two first-round picks and Kevin Knox for Russell Westbrook. Do you take it?
And where do I sign?
Yeah.
Just, you got to get out from under that Westbrook contract.
Well, no, if you're the Knicks GM.
Oh, you did specify that, and I was just so eager to get rid of Westbrook. I still like Westbrook. I feel bad for him. If you're the Knicks,
yeah, see,
no. Because you still have this... If I'm running the Knicks, I'm clearly delusional. So as a delusional person, I'm assuming that I will be able to cash in on 2021 free agency and develop players along the way. So if I'm delusional enough to believe that, then I say no to Westbrook because I'm just saving myself for 2021.
See, I would think if you're delusional, you want to win as soon as possible.
Well, they know they're not going to, though, so they've already kind of resigned themselves to 2 years of bad, and then they can, in theory, you know, get but someone in 2021.
You're on the brink of losing your team and your ownership and being, well, every fan in New York wants you to lose your team, essentially, and you don't make that trade to have a great one-man show.
Knicks fans have, like, Stockholm syndrome, I feel like, at this point. Like, they're just so used to being bad, but there's always they have this, again, delusional hope of, we're the Mecca. You're not, but whatever. We're the Mecca of basketball, so we can get a few young guys, sign some big free agents, and boom, back on top. So I feel like they have patience, but it's only because they're just numb to the pain at this point.
Okay.
Like, when you've sucked for so long, like, eventually people just, I mean, they expect you to be good, but they know you won't, so they just deal with it.
So they've slipped into the insanity.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at least there is one bright spot for New York Knicks fans. Oh, wait.
Psych.
What did their third overall pick do?
Let's see. So through two summer league games, he has 18 points on 7 of 33 shooting. That's 2 of 13 from 3. He has 15 rebounds, so I guess that's nice. But he has 10 turnovers to only 2 assists. He has the worst tunnel vision I have ever seen. Like, there was a play last night, or whenever the last game was. He drove baseline, pretty nice move, and then he kind of went for up and under reverse layup, whatever, and he had a guy wide open in the corner and a guy wide open kind of wing top of the key three-pointer. Didn't even look at him at all, missed the layup. Later on, or maybe it was earlier, I don't remember, but, you know, he drives middle, gets into the lane, kind of gets swarmed. Kevin Knox is nobody within 15 feet of him, top of the key. Knox has already made like 3 threes, and he shoots like a tough fadeaway jumper and misses it. And they're still counting on him to be the savior of the franchise in the time being. It's wonderful.
I can't believe, if people would just listen to us, we could save so many broken hearts.
It's true.
I mean, the Knicks.
I mean, we told you never to love anything because emotional investment brings pain, but no one listened.
But no one ever said not to hate anything because I mean.
Hatred keeps you strong.
Hatred keeps you strong. And I didn't go in being like, I'm going to just hate RJ Barrett, but his game is just, ugh. Ever since the first time I ever saw him.
See, that's the thing, is I wanted him to be successful at Duke because by the grace of Satan, I'm a Duke fan now.
Don't you dare say that.
But when you pointed out to me, I was like, dang, like this kid is really annoying. Having said that, it is summer league, obviously. It's, you know, Trae Young looks terrible for summer league and like the first half of the year, turned it on strong at the end. If you were a Knicks fan, would you be panicking? I mean, none of them are because they're insane, but would you be panicking as a rational Knicks fan if such a thing existed?
Yeah. I mean, you just had the most disappointing summer maybe of all time.
And like I mean, the competition's only going to get better, right? Uh-huh. So if you're struggling against like scrubs that are going to be playing in Turkey in a month, what are you going to do against actual NBA teams?
I'd say a third of the league has a chance to win the title. And then there's like five teams that have absolutely no chance. And then there's just kind of that middle tier that who knows, like the Sacramento Kings, they may be able to make the playoffs finally. They look like they're on the upswing, but there's some teams that are just like, we have no hope at all. And it's hard not to panic when you're one of those teams.
That is true.
Another reason the Knicks should trade for Westbrook is so that RJ Barrett can be mentored by Westbrook. Let's just cut it and nip it in the bud and just...
So wait, are you saying you want RJ Barrett to look at Westbrook and see, oh my gosh, I don't want to turn out like that. I better pass the ball.
We can see what kind of character the kid has, because he can either see himself in Westbrook or he can just be like, that's how it's supposed to be played and can end his career shortly. Either way, I win.
And Kendall's not usually this, like, I don't want to say vengeful, but I don't know. He's not usually a wrathful god.
Well, it's like I got the Kawhi staying in Toronto thing wrong, so I want to make sure I balance the scales back.
But yeah, and he's been on the RJ Barrett is not good train probably longer than anyone. So.
Oh, yeah. I think he dropped like 28 points when I said he wasn't good. So I was definitely in the minority there.
You were firing off hot takes at that time.
But after all this time and failure, you've come back to me. But speaking of staying with the Duke freshman, we have Zion Williamson who slept the wrong way, so he was out for the rest of the summer league. Luckily, Zion has some veterans around him that will actually help his development, like true professionals that are going to like just teach him outside the game and how the business is run of the NBA, mm-hmm. which I think is very underrated when you're a young player.
That is very true. I mean, Drew Holiday is going to help with that. More than anyone is Derek Favors. And I say this as tears roll down my face. Just kidding. I lost my tear ducts in the war. But man, seeing the Jazz tribute video to Favors, like that was a gut punch for me, because Favors was the last link to like the dark ages. The, you know, when Ty Corbin was the head coach, when we were terrible, and when Gordon Hayward was young and ugly. Gordon Hayward really went through like adult puberty here, which was kind of weird. But like Favors, like he came here and he was 18 years old or 20 years old or whatever. And he was just, you know, it's like, oh, he's this raw building block for the franchise. And I never really saw it. And then he just like paid his dues, put in the work, always, you know, was always consistent. And then one day we realized like, dang, like this guy's really good. And he's been playing out of position here the whole time because the Jazz kind of decided Rudy was the future. But, you know, he saved our butts in the playoffs a couple times, like game six against OKC two playoffs ago, or the Clippers series where we ended up winning. Rudy went down that first game, and Favors was playing on like one leg with a bad back, played out of his mind in that game one so we could steal the win, and then did enough the rest of the series to win. Like, I'm going to miss Favors so much. It's like, you know, that there's that meme from the Avengers where it's like, what did it cost? And then, you know, everything. And when the Jazz win a championship a year or two from now, God willing and the creek don't rise, it's gonna be like, what did it cost? And I'm gonna be the crying little kid that says Favors. If some meditation ain't working, so I'm about to lose it. Cause I caught up in my cranium, and it's feeling quite clueless. If my meditation ain't working, so I'm about to lose it. Caught up in my cranium, it's got me feeling quite clueless.
I've heard it both ways.